All right, we're taking up a problem in Parshas Va'era, where God again charges Moshe to go back to the Jews. It seemed that the first time Moshe went to the Jews, they listened to him, but his first diplomatic initiative, if you want to call it that, when he went to Paro and conveyed the message of God, it seems to have ended in failure at that point. Pretty obvious. Not only did he not achieve the objective, but Paro made things even harder, and the situation of the Jews worsened at first. And you see that Moshe, at the end of Shemos, sort of complains to God that why did you make it worse? From the time that I came here, things got worse. And all the commentaries raised a problem with that. First of all, why would Moshe complain? But aside from that, God had told him that Paro would not listen, that this is not going to be a simple thing, a one-time encounter, that he would go to Paro and he would convince him and Paro would let them go. It's not going to happen that way. It's going to be protracted. It's going to be long, drawn out. And Paro at first will refuse, and then God will increase his signs and mofsim, which have many purposes, to convince the Jewish people of God's existence and to convince the Egyptians as well. So it's therefore difficult that when things went badly, that Moshe would complain. Ostensibly, he was prepared for this. He should have known. So some of the commentaries explain that it's true that Moshe didn't expect immediate success, but he was completely caught off guard by the setback, by the failure, which made things much worse. And that was what he was complaining about. Anyways, God tells him that now you will see, Ata Tira, now you will see what I will do to Paro. For Yad Chazak Yeshalchem, he'll send them out due to a strong hand. And due to a strong hand, he will drive them out of his land. That it's not going to succeed through persuasion. It's going to succeed because of the force that God will bring to bear on the Egyptians. Then you have in Parshas Va'era, God speaks to Moshe. And reaffirms the bris that God established his covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, and that God has heard the groans of the Bnei Israel, that the Egyptians are torturing them, enslaving them, and so forth. V'eskeres brisi, and God remembered the covenant, which means that the time for the execution of the covenant has come. L'chein emor. Then God charges Moshe to go to the Bnei Israel and to repeat the basic points that I am the Lord, that I will take you out of the burdens of Egypt. These are the four languages of Geula, by the way. V'yitzalti eschem me'avodasam, and I will save you from their enslavement, saving, v'ga'alti, Geula, redemption, and v'lakachti, and I'll take you unto me as a nation. And I'll be unto you as a God. So this is the fulfillment of the covenant, of the promise that God made. And you will know that I am the Lord your God. So ultimately, the ultimate effect of all this will be the fact that you will know beyond any doubt, Yedias Hashem, they'll have knowledge of God. And then I'll bring you to the land that I lifted my hand, so to speak, I promised, to give to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And I'll give it unto you as a heritage, Ani Hashem. So the question arises, on what basis were the Jews supposed to believe this? Is it to be understood that the people that Moshe was going to were ordinary people? They were the descendants of the Avos, of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but over time they had experienced a tremendous growth and they had become very numerous, but then they had been subjected to this enslavement, subjugation. And what was their state of knowledge? Would any of this message resonate with them? Did they know anything about this at all? Is somebody coming as a stranger and his objective is just to convince them? Convince them that there's a purpose, there's a meaning, and God has selected you, and now is the time, and just follow me. That does not seem to be the case. As you study the Rambam, and how he interprets the questions that Moshe asked of God, that they will ask me your name, and then he asked God for a sign before he could go back to the Jews, which means that amongst the Jews there were the leaders, the elders, and they retained the knowledge, the ideas. This was a people in formation, and they subscribed to a certain way of life. That's why they were B'nai Yisrael, they were the Jewish people. And the idea that there was a covenant between them and God, and the basic outline that they were destined to become a separate nation with a mission, and that the enslavement in Egypt was not the end, but it was a step along the way, and eventually there would be a redeemer. The idea that a redeemer would come to them and effectuate their release from bondage and lead them to the promised land, so to speak, that's something that they knew. Whether every individual, the extent of the knowledge of every individual is not the issue, but clearly amongst the nation there were those leaders that accepted this and knew this. Otherwise, what's the basis for Moshe to even talk to them? He's coming out of nowhere. Why should they believe him? And what's he talking about, going to a different land, and so on and so forth? So on that basis, the fact is that they had this knowledge, they were prepared that if the individual were to come along, I suppose in a certain sense it's sort of, you could look at it today, nowadays, the state of the Jews nowadays, with regard to the idea of a Mashiach. Unfortunately, there's been too much distortion when it comes to the idea of Mashiach. But let's assume that an individual who indeed had the abilities, had the potential to be the Mashiach, and was doing certain things which were in line with the Messianic agenda. Now, if the people that he's coming to, if they had no idea of a Mashiach, and let's assume, I'm not saying this is the way it's going to work out, but let's assume that other people who did know about the Mashiach were going to convince us that we should relate to this person as though he were the Mashiach. Well, it's very difficult if we never heard of the concept. So now he's coming after all these years, and he's going to convince us that there is a concept of Mashiach, and that he's the one. That would be very, very difficult. However, the knowledge of the phenomenon itself, that there is a Mashiach, there is a period of time, a messianic era, in which the world will achieve its purpose, that's something which is part of Torah, and which is accepted by all of the people who accept Torah as being divine. So now we believe in the phenomenon. And Machake, we anticipate, we look forward to it. The only thing is, we have to be very, very careful, and we can't allow our emotions to govern our decision here. Get carried away by false messiahs, which has been a problem throughout Jewish history. But if the individual who has the real characteristics of Mashiach, indeed the Rambam says that the Hashkachas Hashem, the providence of God, has seen to it that now, in our days, the entire world is filled with the knowledge that there is such a thing as the Mashiach. Except, there's different opinions, there's falsifications. Some people maintain it's a Jesus and he'll come back, and other kinds of absurd ideas. But the fact of the matter is that the world is aware of this phenomenon, that there will be a Mashiach, there will be an end of days, so to speak, even though they have a false idea as to who and to what. But the benefit of that is that when the true Mashiach comes and manifests himself in a manner which will not be open to dispute, then the entire world will accept him because they've already been prepped, so to speak. So that's a very key thing, that we are prepped. The only thing is we have to be very careful. There are people who try to exploit that and to get us to believe in something which is a counterfeit Mashiach. Now here too, using that model, it would seem, it would make sense that when Moshe came to the Jews, then he wasn't coming to a people who had no idea of this Redeemer, that they were destined to be removed and to be removed by God, and a Redeemer would come to them who was a great prophet, and so on and so forth. You have to assume that they were prepped, that this was part of their expectations. The only thing is, that's always an issue. How do I know it's you? How do I know it's Moshe? How do I know that now is the time? Maybe the time's not ready yet. You always have all these types of problems because people are limited in how much they can perceive. It's always very, very difficult to assess the historical period that you are in. Is this the correct time? Some people jump to conclusions and they prematurely decide that this is the Messianic era, and some people to the contrary. They're completely mesmerized by the situation as it is, and they can't envision a different situation. You always have those two different extremes. That some say it's not the right time yet, it's too soon. Some say we've waited too long, we should have gone already. You always have that kind of a thing. But that is the context, it seems to me, that Moshe's mission could be successful only if the people were properly prepared to accept it. Now, the first time, they listened to him, it says, because he communicated the knowledge that would be necessary, essentially the name of God, the concept of God, whatever other concepts were conveyed, we don't know, but the main ideas, that he would have to be someone who had the appropriate knowledge. And beyond that, however, he had to do the miracles, which would indicate that God had designated him to be the leader of the Jews and to effectuate this mission. However, there was a setback. And now God has charged Moshe again to repeat the message to the Jewish people. And what we find is that Moshe spoke thus to the Jewish people. This is chapter 6, Pasuk Tes. He reiterated the ideas that God had told him to speak to them. V'lo shamu al Moshe. And they didn't listen to Moshe. Mikotzer ruach. Because of a certain shortness. Ruach can mean breath, literally. It's also used to denote the spirit. U'me'avoda kasha. And from hard work. How are we to understand this? Did they reject the idea? It's true that there are certain times when a person is not in a condition to receive something. But here it's saying because it implies a certain type of tiredness, exhaustion from the labor. But if that's the only issue, if that's the only problem, so then, of course, a person has to utilize timing, has to know when to communicate. And could have said, okay, we'll come back later and talk again. But this is clearly not the intent of the pasuk, to tell us that this happened to be at a bad time. The Evan Ezra says that he explains the meaning of the, because it's two things, two causes are given. One is, mikotzer ruach. Kotzer means a certain shortness. Ruach, as we said, shortness of breath. But I don't think that's what it's describing, that simply they couldn't catch their breath and therefore they couldn't listen. Because as we said, if that's the case, just wait until they recuperate a little bit. So it's talking about a certain mental condition, a certain spiritual condition. It's a shortening of the spirit. That a person has to retain the ability, even though the situation is going against them and things look bleak, but sometimes a person has the capacity to still remove himself from that and to be able to look at it from a certain perspective. To be able to take into consideration the entire perspective is a certain attitude of the mind. So that takes care of kotzer ruach. The kotzer ruach is a cumulative effect, according to the Evan Ezra. From the extent of the galus, orech ha-galus. From the extent of it, the length of it. Now that's an important thing, because the time that one experiences it has an effect. If something is of short duration, even if it's painful, you can endure it. It may not have such a devastating effect upon your spirit. But after a while, a person begins to lose hope. His spirit recedes because he's been disappointed. And why is it going on so long? And since it goes on so long, he takes that to be that's the reality. And there's just nothing you can do about it. Becomes a victim to it. It's sort of immutable in his mind. So that has an effect upon the spirit, specifically with regard to this kind of a message, which is saying that the situation is going to change. bear in mind that everything, their reaction over here is purely with regard to this message of Moshe Rabbeinu, that don't take this to be the reality. This is certainly not immutable. It appears that way to you. But if you have emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's a very big point over here, that the attitude of the Jews in response to what Moshe is saying, bottom line, it all has to do with what is the basis of your emunah, your faith, your trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If that is secure, if it is on a proper foundation, so then it's not going to be moved by this thing or the other thing. What happens today, what happens tomorrow, because that's not the basis. The basis is your yediyah, you know. You know that everything that happens is under the control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you have a haftacha from God, that God is Nemon, that God is faithful, and that's the basis. If that's the basis, you're not moved by how powerful it looks from your vantage point. You know that your vantage point is very, very limited. But that is really the test. That's the test of one's emunah. Now, the other part, the avodah kasha, is another factor. According to the Evan Ezra, that's a reference to the hard work, sheneschatcha aleihem, that Paro decreed. That was a new development, that is to say, the worsening of the situation, the hard work which was a worsening of the situation. So those two factors, the extent of the exile and the perception that it's getting worse, and the labors are getting worse, this had an effect upon them, and they couldn't accept what Moshe was saying because of this. This was not the immediate reaction. In the initial phase, when Moshe first went to them, if you go back to Shemos, the Torah describes what took place when Moshe first appeared to the Jews, when he came back from Midian. So first he went to the Jews, to the elders of the Jews. And it says, this is in chapter Dalad, 4:27. Vayomer, then that's first of all where Aharon goes forth to meet Moshe. And this is Vayelech Moshe v'Aharon. This is Chavtes. Moshe and Aharon went, Vayasfu es kol ziknei b'nei Yisrael. And they gathered all the elders of b'nei Yisrael. See, that's the point. They didn't gather the entire nation, all of the ordinary people. That would have been very difficult anyways, to communicate with masses of people. But they communicated with the elders, with the leaders, and who would pass on the message to their people. But also, these are the ones who had the appropriate knowledge. And Aharon spoke all the things that God had said to Moshe. Of course, at this point, Aharon has become the spokesman, the one who does the actual speaking. And he did the sign before the nation. So it could be that there were two phases here. One is where he spoke to the elders to establish the foundation, and then the demonstration was for more people, was before the people. Then what does it say? Vayamein ha'am. And they believed. Vayishmu, when they heard, ki pakad Hashem es b'nei Yisrael, that God remembered b'nei Yisrael, v'chi roh es anyam, and that he had seen their affliction. Vayiktu vayishtachavu. So they kneeled and they bowed down, as that was a bowing down of acknowledgement, of thanksgiving, of hodoya to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that was a very positive response. And what was it based upon? It's what we said, that they had been prepared, these ideas had been part of their knowledge, their heritage, had been passed down from generation to generation, based upon their emunah, their faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when Moshe, there would be a Redeemer, when Moshe came, he did satisfy the requirements. He was able to convince them. But apparently, that was not a perfect type of belief, because it was still subject to the vicissitudes of the situation, of the time. It wasn't above and beyond any kind of development. And that with the experience of the setback, the next phase, Moshe went to Paro. And presumably the expectations were that things would start. That would be the beginning of a process. It wouldn't end at that point. And some commentaries say that that's what Moshe's complaint was, is that he knew that Paro would not let them go at this point, but he was completely unprepared for a worsening of the situation. And that's exactly what happened, that the situation got worse. So this is a greater stress. This is a greater test of the extent of the foundation of Amunah that one has in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it would seem over here that Moshe now had a new problem on his hands, that he had to go back not just to Paro and deal with Paro, but he had to go back to his base, so to speak. He had to go back to the Jews and to convince them not to lose hope, not to lose faith, and to reiterate all of the foundations. That's what God told them, to go back to the foundations, because ultimately that's where it all comes from. A person's emunah has to be based upon solid foundations. It can't be based upon what happens today, what happens tomorrow. If things go well, so then God is great. If things don't go well, then I got a problem. That's an absurdity. It always has to be based upon the proper foundations. And he goes back to them, and the pasuk is telling us that at this point in time, you could see that there was a problem over here, that they had not been able to get over that weakness, that they were affected. They allowed their emotions, they allowed their spirit, the momentary, the fact that they were now beaten down, that the extent of the galus, of the exile, the worsening of the enslavement, put them in a particular emotional disposition, and the challenge was that they should break out of that. They should break out of that. They should be able to overcome that and not to lose sight of the basic principles, the foundations. And at this point in time, it says, Velo Shamo. They did not listen. That, I think, is the meaning of the pasuk. There's a difference between the two situations. The first situation is presented in Shemos, and it says, Vayam Ein Ha'am, the people believed. And there's a difference, though, because what about the extent of the exile at that point? What about the hard labor at that point? That was a different situation. That was the first time, and they were willing to entertain the idea. Their spirit was not closed off at that point from believing it. And there was a certain sense of hope. So they went along with Moshe. However, as a result of the disappointment of the setback, that had an effect upon them and put them into the state which we read about over here. Now it was necessary to reaffirm all of these points, and now they were affected by the extent of the exile. They had a totally different attitude. It changed their attitude and the hard work.